Once again, here's the host of Positive Living, Patricia Raskin, on TalkZone.com.
Hi, everyone. We are back. You're on listening to Positive Living, and I'm Patricia Raskin. My guest is Linda Lantieri. Her book is Building Emotional Intelligence, Techniques to Cultivate Inner Strength in Children. Linda Lantieri is a founding member of the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning and co-founder of Resolving Conflict Creativity Program, a George Lucas Educational Foundation Fellow, and a 45-year veteran of New York City Public Schools. She's the editor of Schools with Spirit, Nurturing Inner Lives of Children and Teachers. And she's also a Fulbright Scholar, as well as many other things. We could spend 10 minutes talking about Linda Lantieri's achievements and accomplishments. But Linda, we're going to move on, because so much of what you've done has really been pioneering work. And one of the things that you've been a pioneer in is looking at this whole piece of emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. So the question is why? Why is emotional intelligence so important? I mean, we know the 3 hours of reading, writing, arithmetic, that's so important. But why? How did you discover that it was so critical that you really wanted to make sure we really focused on this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we have Daniel Goleman to first thank, who wrote the book Emotional Intelligence in 1995. And in that book, he really argued that schools would better equip children for life if they not only had a curriculum that included the academic competence, but also coached them in the basics of social and emotional competence. And I think it was the first time we began to realize that the kinds of skills we need for living in the 21st century are a whole lot more than academic and intellectual competence, or at least what we're testing still on standardized tests across this country and really the world. And so that was the first thing. And then I think that as we learned more and more about the brain and brain science, we began to see how critical a child's brain is at early stages of their life, and how they go through major growth until the mid to late 20s. And as a result, each experience that they have sculpts this brain circuitry during this period of growth. And that's what it depends on. And so when children have experiences that expose them to being able to calm down when they're upset, they're going to develop a greater strength in the brain circuits for managing distress later on. So it's such a critical period of time to expose young people to some of these competencies that we've been talking about.
Right, because if not, for example, we know children who are brilliant, but if they're fragile emotionally and they get stressed out quickly, they're not going to be able to learn as well, correct?
Exactly. We have kids making the Ivy League colleges, but will they be able to have all of the competencies they need to be successful in life as well? And the big question is, maybe, maybe not. Because at the moment, we're not teaching these kinds of skills yet as part of a natural, normal part of the curriculum. That social and emotional learning is beginning to be front and center of many schools, but for many people, our vision of education does not include that. But yet, we find out from the research, again, that when students do have a clear, solid program in social and emotional learning that's research-based, they do better. They do better in their behavior in and out of classroom, but they also do better in their academic achievement tests as well. So helping children master their emotions and relationships makes them better learners all around.
Very, very much so. So the brain connection, the connection to the brain, mm-hmm. is really critical in all of this. Actually, even before, would you say, before the learning piece, do you think this comes first?
Well, definitely. I mean, it's interconnected, isn't it? Because it's that area of the brain that is developing the neurocircuitry, is that same area of the brain, that prefrontal cortex, that executive center that holds the circuits for both inhibiting disruptive kinds of emotions and for paying attention. So when we begin to work with that part of a child's brain and really help them exercise that part of their brain, we're helping them figure out how not to get panicked on a pop quiz, how they realize how clearly their distress kills their ability to learn. It kind of works against them. And now we're understanding that improving attention and memory, along with freeing the mind of this impulsivity and distress, puts a child in the best zone for learning. This is what we're learning as well. So the more we can help a child be in that best zone for learning, the better it's going to be for them. And this is what these skills do.
Let's talk about how to use these skills under tough situations. First of all, when kids witness violence, which you see so much on television today, even in the news, you know, and in movies, and also teens, you know, how we help teens cope when they're particularly exposed to role models that can lead them down paths that aren't good for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think it goes to communication and modeling. Those are the two big ones for me, that we continue to keep those lines of communication open with our young people and our people in their lives that they trust and know that we believe in them no matter what. The research tells us that if every child had someone in their lives that believed in them no matter what, had what I call unconditional regard for them, then our children would be a lot better off. And that's key. And so to keep those lines of communication open, to talk about the tough things, to address things that come up when it's happening is key. Very often, again, we try to protect our children from things. You know, we might see something frightening on the highway. We might see an accident, and we're hoping that our kids are not registering it. Well, they probably are. And the better thing to do would be to maybe stop a little while later and just mention it and send some good energy to the situation, that the people are getting all the attention they need. What then happens is that fear response that may have initially happened for the child, especially a young child, gets replaced instead with this other response, which is, we're doing something about this. We're helping. We're wishing the situation well. And so they don't lodge it as a trauma, as something that adults are not ready to talk about. They lodge it instead as something that they can do something about.
What about tough love? Tough love, Linda, meaning, you know, when you just have to say, look, this is my rule, you live in my house, this is the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a definite role of parents and in most cases in schools. I think that for me, in longest, tough love is combined with an understanding of the level of emotions that go along with it all, that there's an acceptance of feelings around it is huge for me, and that's the difference. Very often we go right to correct the behavior before we're acknowledging the feeling of whatever the feeling might be, from frustration to upset to anger. And what happens then is that we think that when we accept the feeling, when we say, I see you're very angry, or I know you're really upset, we feel like, oh, then we have to say, and it's okay the way you've behaved. No, we can have some very direct feelings as well as directives about what we're doing in relation to their behavior. But what often breaks the line of communication is when we're also negating feelings, when we're not acknowledging what might be underlying this behavior.
So we have a few minutes left. What is your advice to parents listening to this who are saying a couple of things like, you know, my child really means well, but I feel that they're hyperactive, or they can't sit still, or they're just not listening to me, and I don't know how to get through. What do you say to those parents, Linda?
I guess what I would say is give the idea a chance of having a regular quiet time with them, and hopefully building emotional intelligence will help them actually do that. I know that a lot of grandparents are using this book as well because they have that kind of quality time with their grandchildren, but I think that grandparents, parents, teachers, if we just kind of make that time and set it aside to really allow ourselves to be fully present, then lots of good things can start to happen. And hopefully there'll be some ideas in this book that would help people do that easily, would be able to actually help them take that quiet time with their child. But I think it's all about relationship for me, and it's all about continuing to keep those lines of communication open, that you are your child's best friend as well, because they need us. They need us in their lives to help make sense out of what I feel is a very scary life sometimes for kids. And it's our job. It's our job to really be there for them in ways that are fully present.
Even when they're not nice and disrespectful and sometimes can be mean, even during those times, Linda.
Even during those times. And that doesn't mean we have to condone the behavior, but we do have to keep showing that we are loving them and that we are unconditional about that loving. And then it's from that place of love and care and empathy that I think we can begin to give the directives that we also should be doing as well.
Tell us about this wonderful CD in the back of the book.
The CD is basically, again, a prompt and a help for folks that want to sit down with their children on a regular basis to begin to build their emotional intelligence. And the CD has to do with a script that are there to use. Most of them are under 10 minutes. In some cases, they're 5 minutes for the younger children, and they're age appropriate. So there's a 5 to 7 year old script of calming the body and focusing the mind, two different ones. There's an 8 to 11 year old, and then there's a 12 year old and up that I understand a lot of adults are using as well. So again, it gives you a time to be able to do something together with your child and then debrief it and then talk about it or journal about it or draw about it, and so that you're having a common experience of quieting the mind and calming the body.
Okay. So those are the things that we can really use in the CD. And is that something that the children can listen to too, or is it more for the parents?
No, it's for them. It's actually for them. And I've heard many, many good stories already of children being exposed to the CD through an adult and then using it on their own, including a 5-year-old child whose parent walked in on him just the other day, who was, interestingly enough, trying to go to sleep, and he couldn't. And so we put the CD on to help him. And when he noticed that his mom was in the room, he said, "Mom, I don't need you. I could calm down myself now."
Oh,
you know, so I think once kids are exposed to it, then they could use it.
All right, Linda, in the 2 minutes we have left, here's my question. You have seen some tough situations. You were in inner city for years as an educator. You know, you've seen the tough stuff. The question is, what's your closing thought for our listeners today? What do you want to leave them with, knowing that we are in a stressful world? Kids are faced with more tough choices than they've ever been before, with more, I want to say, negative influences than they ever have. More things are more open than they've ever been before. So it's easier to go in a direction that may not be right for the child or the teen. What is your advice and what is your message of hope, Linda?
Well, I would definitely say that adults are the ones that need to help children with all of this, that we need to be the people in children's lives that give them the kinds of capacities and skills and inner strength that they're going to need. And it's our job to do that. It's really our job to not give them half the picture, you know, to really, really help them do what they need to do. And for that, we need to give them all of the capacities they need. And I think the area of social and emotional learning are the ones very often that we leave out, and we can. We've got to start with that as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Linda, for being on the program.
You're welcome.
Thank you. It's wonderful. Stay on the line. Thank you. Linda Lantieri, international expert in social and emotional learning, conflict resolution, and crisis intervention with 40 years of experience in the field of education. She's the director of the Inner Resilience Program, and her book is Building Emotional Intelligence, Techniques to Cultivate Inner Strength in Children, with an introduction and practices guided by Daniel Goleman, who is a psychologist known worldwide for his book on emotional intelligence. Folks, this has been a specially pre-recorded program for you. You can log on to lindalandtieri.org, L-A-N-T-I-E-R-I, and check out my website, which is now reorganized and revamped, raskinresources.com. I'd love to hear from you. As I always say when I close these shows, stay healthy, stay happy, get the support you need, and know you can make your dreams come true. Until next time and next week for Positive Living on TalkZone.com, I'm Patricia Raskin. Have a great Monday and a great week.